Before we begin, I need to confirm I'm speaking with the right person for compliance purposes. Are you currently working as CFO at TechVantage Solutions?
Yes, that's correct. I've been CFO here for about 2 years now.
Great. First of all, I'd like to introduce myself and explain a bit about how this conversation will go. My name is Riley. I'm an AI-based interviewer with Insight Partners. I know it might feel a little different speaking with an AI. But don't worry, I'm designed to learn quickly and keep things conversational. I might respond quickly, but feel free to pause or expand as much as you like. I'll wait and pick up once you're done. Does that sound all right to you?
Sure, that works for me. This is actually pretty interesting. I haven't done an AI interview before.
All right, let's get started. This interview is part of a research project to better understand SaaS growth metrics and financial evaluation strategies for enterprise software companies. From what I saw, you spent several years in financial leadership roles, including your time at CloudScale and now TechVantage. That's great. I'll focus my questions around that experience. There are about 6 core questions, and I may ask some follow-ups depending on how things go. Before we begin, do you have any questions for me, or are you ready to get started?
No questions from me. Happy to dive in.
Perfect. Let's start with the fundamentals. When you're evaluating the financial health of a SaaS company, what are the key metrics that tell you whether a business has sustainable unit economics?
That's a great starting question. From my experience at CloudScale, where we scaled from $10 million to $200 million in ARR over 8 years, and now at TechVantage, I've learned that not all recurring revenue is created equal. The 3 metrics I always start with are: first, the LTV to CAC ratio, but with a twist. I want to see at least 3-to-1, but more importantly, I want the payback period under 18 months. Second, net revenue retention by customer cohort, not just the blended number everyone reports. And third, gross revenue retention, because that tells you about underlying product value. You can have impressive growth numbers, but if your unit economics don't work, you're essentially building a house of cards.
That's really helpful. Thank you. I'd love to dig a bit deeper on that cohort analysis piece. Can you share an example of how looking at net revenue retention by cohort revealed something that the blended number missed?
Perfect example from CloudScale. Our blended NRR was around 115%, which looked decent. But when I broke it down by cohort, I discovered that customers who came in before 2019 had NRR of 130%, while our 2020 and 2021 cohorts, we were sitting at 95%. That told us our product market fit was actually declining, even though our overall numbers looked healthy. Turns out we had expanded too quickly into adjacent markets without properly adapting our value proposition. The newer customers weren't finding the same sticky value as our original core segment.
Wow, that's really insightful. So essentially, the blended metric was masking a fundamental product market fit issue. Got it. What did you do to address that discovery?
We had to make some tough calls. First, we temporarily slowed our expansion into new verticals and really doubled down on understanding why those newer cohorts weren't expanding. We discovered our onboarding process had become too generic. We were treating all customers the same when different segments needed different value realization paths. We also realized our pricing model wasn't aligned with how the newer customer segments actually derived value from our platform. It took about 6 months to course correct, but we got those newer cohorts up to 110% NRR.
So, to summarize what I heard, the cohort analysis revealed declining product market fit in newer segments that was hidden by strong performance in your original customer base. You addressed it by slowing expansion, segmenting your onboarding approach, and adjusting pricing to better align with how different customer types derived value. Did I get that right?
Exactly right. That's a perfect summary.
Would you like to add anything else about cohort analysis before we move on to customer concentration risk?
One thing I'd add. When you're doing cohort analysis, don't just look at revenue retention. Look at usage metrics by cohort too. Sometimes customers stick around but reduce their usage over time, which is a leading indicator of future churn. We started tracking what I call engagement-adjusted retention. basically weighting the retention numbers by usage intensity. That gave us about 6 months heads up on potential retention issues.
That's a great perspective. Thank you. Let's shift to customer concentration risk. How do you think about the right level of customer diversification for a healthy SaaS business?
Customer concentration is often overlooked, but it's absolutely critical for valuation and risk assessment. My rule of thumb is that your top 10 customers should represent no more than 40% of ARR, and no single customer should be above 10%. I've seen companies with impressive growth rates get hammered in valuations because they were essentially dependent on a handful of large enterprise deals. When we were preparing for our Series C at CloudScale, investors specifically dug into our customer concentration metrics and logo retention by revenue cohort. They wanted to see that our growth was driven by a broad base of satisfied customers, not just a few big contracts that could walk away. The market really values distributed, predictable revenue streams. At TechVantage, we actually turned down a deal that would have been 20% of our ARR because we felt the concentration risk wasn't worth it at our stage.
Interesting. So you actually walked away from a large deal because of concentration risk. That takes discipline. Can you expand on how you made that decision? What was the thought process?
It was tough, honestly. The sales team was not happy with me. But I ran a scenario analysis. What happens if we lose this customer in year 2 or 3? It would have set us back 18 months in terms of growth trajectory and made fundraising much more difficult. Plus, large customers often want custom features and pricing concessions that can distract you from your core product roadmap. We decided to focus on signing 5 customers at 4% ARR, each instead of 1 at 20%. It was the right call. Our valuation multiple actually increased because investors saw more predictable, diversified revenue.
Makes sense. So you weighed the short-term revenue impact against long-term business risk and valuation. Really helpful. Appreciate you sharing that. Let's talk about the Rule of 40. How do you think about balancing growth and profitability, especially in the current market environment?
The Rule of 40 has become more important since the market correction in 2022. Historically, investors were willing to overlook profitability if you had strong growth. Now they want to see a path to profitability. My view is that Rule of 40 is a floor, not a ceiling. If you're below 40, you need a really compelling story about why and when you'll get there. At TechVantage, we target 50. We're currently at 35% growth and 15% EBITDA margin. But here's what's important. The composition matters as much as the total. Profitable growth is more valuable than unprofitable growth. I'd rather see a company at 20% growth and 25% margins than 40% growth and break even, especially in today's market. Investors are paying premiums for companies that can grow efficiently.
This has been incredibly insightful, Michael. Let me ask one final question. If you were advising a SaaS CEO who's preparing for their Series B, what would be the one metric or framework you'd tell them to get absolutely right before they go to market?
Get your unit economic story crystal clear. Not just the high-level numbers, but the underlying drivers. Investors will dig deep. They'll want to understand your LTV calculation methodology, how you're allocating costs, what your cohort trends look like, and most importantly, how sustainable your CAC efficiency is. Have a defensible model that shows how your unit economics will scale as you grow. Too many companies get caught off guard when investors start pressure testing their assumptions. Build your model from the bottom up, not top down, and be ready to defend every assumption.
Perfect advice to close on. Thank you for sharing your perspective today, Michael. That was really helpful. That concludes my questions. Wishing you a smooth rest of your day.